Poppy.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
So good.
So, I have a confession to make. Last week when we talked about the bachelorette party, it was so fresh that we just hadn't had like enough time to really talk and chat and chill and decide what we thought and wanted to say. So I want to get into it now because it was so fun.
We had so much fun. Yeah, we were just kind of decompressing before returning to reality. And now that I'm like going through my pictures and everything, like we just had such a good time. This is your PSA to go to Florida.
Uh-huh.
Pick a beach.
Sit your happy ass down in that sand and sit there.
And look for little seashells.
Yeah.
Because we did that.
Well, we did that. And also, you know, the post-vacation depression is so real that like when you get back, all you want to do is like enter a fugue state and like not go to work for another 4 days in a row.
Yes.
But it was so good. I think it made it even worse because I was like, I was just in the beach in an ocean that didn't give me the ick.
Yeah.
Like it's not slimy.
Yeah, it's a nice ocean. It's like the beaches were clean. It was absolutely beautiful. And we saw so many dolphins.
Oh my God. Like at least 8 dolphins.
Like wild dolphins, not SeaWorld dolphins.
No, because I am an ass about that and I won't support SeaWorld. But
correct.
So many.
So
and they were
many.
Doing little like flippies. They said hey so many times. And then we saw this pod eating dinner.
I know.
While we ate dinner. And I was like, oh my God, hey.
Dinner
Fancy
party.
Seeing you here.
Hey, girl.
Also, dolphins were being their little asshole selves and playing with their food.
They were. And then we saw a dolphin just for shits. Like, to be a dolphin in the ocean, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's, like, boats and stuff that, like, aren't there to hurt you or catch you. We saw a dolphin that just was playing in front of a ship because they like to play in, like, the waves in front of it or something. And then they also play in the wake.
Yeah.
And they were just jumping. Just
having fun.
Just porpoising.
They were like, bet I can beat you.
Seriously. And they could, man.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just cool. And we learned a lot of cool dolphin facts. Like, did you know that the top layer of their skin, that's what a weird one to remember.
Right.
It replaces itself every 2 hours.
It's true.
Which is why they're so soft and they glide so quick in the water.
And many of them are two-toned. So they are darker from the top and lighter from the bottom. So they fade in with like the shadows and rays underneath the water. And my favorite is those little bastards like music.
Yeah, they're little nosy little guys.
If you sit there and you're blasting like I Want You Back from like 2012, they'll be like, you called?
Yep.
Oh, you know?
Sorry, they do what?
It sounded more like my cat than a dolphin.
True.
But you get it.
You get it, you guys.
Took the little noses up in the air and they're like, oh.
And we went on a tiki boat ride where our driver, I shit you not, looked exactly like Bob from Schitt's Creek.
It was so bad.
And the whole time he's talking to me, I'm like, you're Bob from Schitt's Creek, you're Bob from Schitt's Creek. Uh-huh. And he'd ask me a question. I'm like, what? What, Bob? It wasn't Bob.
No, this isn't my office. I'm just working here.
Yeah. Oh
my gosh. It was so fun. It was so good.
Oh, and that's not even to mention all the Harry Potter stuff we did.
Ugh, my inner child is so much closer to healed today than it was a week and a half ago.
Abby was double fisting butterbeers.
Ugh. I was shoving as much butterbeer as I could physically fit into my mouth.
Worth it.
So good.
I'd
do it again in a heartbeat.
I know. We had a lot of fun, so
it was also, what a way to make me feel old, because it's been so long since I've been to like an amusement park, like a place with actual like real roller coasters mm-hmm. and things, to be like, they can do this now?
Yeah.
Like there's VR in here and shit. Like when I was your age, like
uh-huh.
we had rickety wooden roller coasters. And part of the fun was you really didn't know if you were going to make it.
Yep.
Like,
yeah, your seatbelt was old and like fraying and you're like, I hope it lasts.
Yep, and there's no shoulder harness.
There's like, no shoulder harness, baby.
Like, that's it. You're just like, huh, all right, cool.
We got off one of the rides and Abby was like, I didn't know what part was a screen and what part was real.
And the only time I could definitively say was when fucking child Daniel Radcliffe was on screen. I was like, ha, that's fake.
Yeah.
Got him. But it was so fun. It was very cool. Very, very big shout out and thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Allie's mom and dad. It was amazing. It was so good.
I am very lucky. I have pretty cool parents.
You do. And I am pretty lucky because I now have multiple Polaroids of Hogwarts. So correct. That's cool.
And a Hogsmeade pin.
Mm-hmm.
And a diagonally pin.
Diagonally, for sure.
I think I've left my mark on Universal. I was walking around going to like everything that moved.
Wait. Do your laugh.
So I did that on a ride and it like went silent and it was Voldemort was there. And then I did the and I could the whole ride laughed. I was like, okay, good. I didn't like ruin anyone's experience.
At least you're not pissed. It was so good.
But PSA, if you're gonna go, you have to get the butterbeer and you have to wear sneakers that you don't mind spending like 10 hours in because my dogs were barking.
Oh my god, yes they were.
Oh, were the dogs barking.
You had so many blisters and by the end of this trip you had blisters, swollen feet and burnt feet. And correct. I was impressed that you could move.
Not frankly. Only that, right? So like we're on the flight home and I'm like, all right, my dogs, they're sleeping.
We did you it. Know, they're resting.
They are resting. They are snug as a bug in a rug, if you will. I have my big nerdy dad sneakers on.
Uh-huh.
They're like the New Balance before those were back in. You know, yep. You know exactly what I mean.
I do.
And I was sitting in the aisle seat because why not?
Yeah.
And some lady must have ordered like coffee or something from the flight attendant. But when the flight attendant was giving it to her, he like turned away and he tilted his hand and he dripped coffee, like hot coffee all over my shoes, which went right through my shoes.
Yeah.
So not only were my dogs barking, they were wet. It's like, what the fuck?
And no one likes the smell of wet dog.
No, wet dog, no. You know. But so, and then I didn't want the guy to feel bad, but I was like, can I have some napkins? And he's just like, sure. And I'm like, it's for my shoes.
You spilled for all of the coffee that you put on me.
I was like, I hope she didn't pay for that. Damn. Right. Like half of it's like.
I know. Your dogs were like.
I was like, the dogs, they've been burned.
Oh my gosh. I felt so bad. But I did kick ass at Rummy on that flight home. You dare I say. I
think you did. No, you really did. You kicked my ass.
Did.
Not bad for me teaching Abby how to play Rummy on the flight there. True. On the flight home, she kicked our asses.
I pick up on card games pretty well. I just never remember them past like 2 weeks out. So if I don't keep playing it, it's going to be gone forever.
Well, then after we record, I'm going to kick your ass in Rummy.
That's fine. I have my cards with me.
She has Slytherin cards.
Yeah. Every single fucking time I've taken that test, I'm a Slytherin. And I've just come to accept it. I love it. Cunning, ambitious.
Well, every time I take it, I
How about a Slytherin between those legs, you know? Like, it's good.
I get a Gryffindor.
I know.
Every damn time. But I don't... There's no cool way to be a Gryffindor. Like, Slytherin, you can be Slytherin round, you know?
Yeah.
What do I have?
Lions.
But other than that,
Ron Weasley. I mean, come on.
That's true.
Come on.
A spell backfired.
Allie also found an Instagram video she was quoting the entire time that was half like Harry Potter fandom, half making fun of it, and she was cackling. And not to like pat myself on the back here, but I kind of maid of honored the fuck out of that trip.
You maid of honored the maid of honor fuck out of anything that could be maid of honored.
Pretty fabulous. And the fact that we would like go do something fun, like a little like boat ride to see dolphins swim up around us. And Allie would be like, oh no, the spell backfired. I was dying. I was like, yes, thank you.
Yeah, this is your announcement to... Grab your best friends, save up, you know, do what you be, yeah. Be financially responsible, but save up and go on a trip. And if you are a Harry Potter nerd like we are, you get the two park one day pass and you fucking ride the Hogwarts Express between the parks and you do all that fun shit.
Also,
that's what you got to do.
Mrs.
You don't make the rules.
Allie's mom and I have now almost as many texts as Allie and I do. So
mm-hmm.
That was wild. Oh, also, welcome. to About Time for True Crime.
Oh yeah, that. Hey.
Welcome or welcome back. Hi.
Hey.
We're debriefing a bachelorette party because one half of this show is getting married in like soon. So I know.
So we're having fun.
Yes, we are excited and bopping around. And truly, this is your sign to go on a trip with your friends. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be expensive. You can park your little booty in the sand somewhere and spend $8 on a pass to get in and bring food from home.
Hell yeah. It is
just as amazing of a day as all of the other big fun days.
Which is what we did for part of it too, because we're balling on a budget.
Balling on a budget, and also like, there's a wedding coming up. We got more to ball on. You got to prioritize the balling, you know?
So I know nothing about what we're talking about today.
Which is good because I know a lot about what we're talking about today. Well,
that's fantastic. I'm glad one of us is prepared.
So we're going to start out. I do want to get going. So hi. Hello. Howdy. Welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
Aw, guys.
Here we talk all things criminal justice, from true crime to special topics. We cover cases with the lens of two professionals holding over a decade of education combined.
And over a decade of work experience now, thousands of hours.
Why would you say that to me?
I know.
And just as a heads up, we will always laugh and swear and cope to get through it. Because if you're not laughing, you're what?
Crying.
And so sometimes it's easier to laugh, and that's not to laugh at the expense of any of our victims or the horrible, horrid things that happen in these tales. But
we will most certainly roast the fuck out of any offender that we want to, and we reserve absolutely. That right.
Absolutely. And you know what? I wish more people would. So
I know.
Today's case felt seasonally appropriate to me. After all, it is the May-June graduation era, if you will. But also, it felt appropriate to me because I already knew about it and this time period came up. And I know quite a few people graduating this season, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this seems like one that actually would be helpful to cover today. Because I think there are people that listen to this podcast that might want this heads up before they start and branch off on the new season of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Graduations from all over, high school to college to little dance classes, putting on their Mother Day recitals. Like, there's always something after, you know? Yeah,
happy Mom's Day to all the moms.
Oh, yes. Happy belated Mother's Day. But today we're talking about some high school bullshit. We're talking drama, jealousy, breakups. Think like specifically High School Musical 2 if it was the summer after senior year.
Uh-oh.
Womp womp. Yeah. I actually first heard of this case in my intimate partner violence class. So shout out to Phil for making us listen to it and watch it.
Phil.
Thanks, Phil. But also recently, I came across this case again and thought it was not only an important one to cover, but the timing lined up. And I said, yeah, let's get that out there.
Yeah.
So before we hop into it today, I want to give you a list of some of my sources from the top. Of course, if you want the complete list, you can always look below in the description or to a linked Google Doc that is always there if our sources are too long to fit in the description box characters allowed. So you will always have all of them. But just as a little summary, I used CBS, Boston 25 News, Metro West Daily News, Yahoo News, and more. For trigger warnings today, I'm talking murder, but also intimate partner violence and also just high school. Like, I feel like that's its own trigger.
Yep.
Yeah.
Enough said.
But if you haven't guessed by today's sources, we are in Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
The heart of America, if you will, which I won't. But
but if you will.
But if you will, you certainly can. And to be specific today, we are in Wayland, Massachusetts, way back in the year of 2011. Something like 13 years ago.
See, to me, that's still like 3 years ago.
It is 3 years ago.
Which is so, like, to me, the 90s are still 10 years ago. And that is a very
the
weird...
80s were 20 years ago.
Permanently.
Forever.
Yeah.
2000 is always the year that it is.
It's just such a weird thing. I'm like, oh, God, I'm like getting old. And like, there's you know, what? It's not weird to get old. It's weird to have so many people younger than you.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's like, I see people born in like the 2000s and I'm like, babies, like, you guys must be infants. I was like, holy shit, y'all I've are like voting.
I've worked with clients born in the year of 2019.
Ma'am.
Born.
Ma'am.
Popped out, said hello 5 years ago.
Ugh, what a rough go the first few years.
Yeah. I was like, and that makes me how much older than you?
I know it. But, so, all right, we'll set the scene for 2011 in our minds that wasn't a few years ago.
So we're talking like Shake It Off by Florence and the Machine. We are talking specifically Charlotte Russe and the funky printed jeans that were everywhere. We're probably talking about the rise of Sperry's. We're probably at the front end of that trend.
Are we the back end of like the Osiris big sneakers? And we're going 100%. Into like the boat shoes?
Yeah.
All right, I'm with you.
We're making the switch from like chunky oversized sneakers to like, I could be a boat girl.
Yep.
You know?
But you live in a landlocked state and you certainly didn't do that.
Correct. Yes. All right. Or you're going to like a man-made lake in the middle of Ohio.
Yep.
No offense, Ohio. So that's where we're at. There's like Pitbull is big right now.
Mm-hmm.
Give me everything. That's where we're at.
Yep. Mr. Worldwide.
People are making the transition from mixed CDs to aux cords in their car.
What a weird time.
Mm-hmm. They probably had those like $30 little MP3s that you could get at Best Buy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who didn't?
Oh, I had like 8 because I kept breaking them. My parents were like, we're not buying you an expensive one. So go back and pick out the same $30 one.
Yep. How many burnt CDs that I had?
My cousin used to make these CDs called John Mayer Explosion. And it was just a bunch of John Mayer songs.
I love that.
Amazing. The JMEs were fabulous. There were still CDs coming out like Grammys 2009.
Oh my God, American Idol tour.
Yep. Now that's what I call music, but like way back in the 24, not the 119 that we're at today.
Kids Bop. Oh, those commercials.
That was so bad. No, I hate it. Oh.
Secondhand embarrassment for everyone that was on those.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I hope you guys are doing okay.
I hope. How's therapy going?
Is it going? It should probably be going.
It best be.
Yeah, it best buy. But anyway. So let me tell you, though, because today I want to get into a case that I think probably the life of these two kids was what everybody wanted to be in high school in 2011. And obviously it didn't go well, but
not if we're talking about it here.
No. But I think it's important to talk about because, A, it's always helpful to have someone reminding you that the way things appear are not always the way things are. Mm-hmm. And that is specifically hard, I think, in high school because you're at a time when everything feels like it appears the way it is and your life is just the only one that's different, which is not true.
Yeah. And I think like we've talked about before in this podcast, like when you are younger, all of the things that feel like they're going to be permanent aren't.
Yes.
And a lot of the decisions you make that you think won't be permanent can be. So it's this really weird, like, you have it reversed as a teenager when you're wrong. Like, oh, well, these group of girls are mean to me. You think that's going to be forever. When in the grand scheme of things, that is the smallest blip. And it might be painful for that time, but it passes.
Right. You have a defined graduation date, at least.
Yeah. Like, there's just so many parts of life that I think you feel like, well, that there's no end in sight. When in reality, it's there. And it's not that far away.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about today's case because it's the right time. I think this situation could very well happen again. And I think it's always good to remind people why it shouldn't, but also what to look out for just in case.
Yeah.
So we're hopping into 2011, Wayland, Massachusetts, and we're talking about Lauren Dunn Astley today.
Okay.
And let me tell you, I had a whole thing written out on my description of Lauren. Lauren is like this little 5 foot spunky thing. She's got the most brilliant blue eyes and she smiles with her like full fucking chest, you know? She's one of those. She is talented and artistic and still down to earth. And I had all of these things written out and then some, but I found a description given by her parents and I just haven't found one better than that. So I'm going to read specifically what they said. And here is how they describe Lauren. Lauren was born in Boston, Massachusetts on April 1st, 1993 to Mary Dunn and Malcolm Astley. She was an accomplished tennis player and a member of the Muses, an a cappella singing group. Lauren studied French horn and played in the Metro West Youth Symphony Orchestra, which like represent girl. I also played French horn. Hope you also weren't as embarrassed as I was when you have to empty the spit valves.
Oh,
nasty. Well. But for 8 years, she also attended the YMCA camp Nellie Huckins in Freedom, New Hampshire as a camper and then as a counselor.
Wow.
In 2006, Lauren excelled in the leading role of Annie in the Weston Friendly Society of the Performing Arts. She was also avidly interested in the fashion business and worked at like a cute little boutique in Natick, Massachusetts. It was like a clothing store called 344. I've never heard of it. I haven't been there, but like just adorable.
Mm, Natick's beautiful.
And she was skilled in customer service and relations.
Mm.
She was an active member of the First Parish Unitarian Universalist Church of Wayland, where she sang in the children's choir, took part in the youth group, and also volunteered on several trips to help with rebuilding in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina.
I would so be friends with her.
Mm-hmm. Wait for the best part. She could also drive a stick shift. Right.
I'm learning. I'm literally in the process of learning. And let me tell you, it's I don't hard. Like it.
Nope. And my favorite quote that they describe Lauren as is, Lauren was a self-possessed young woman of energy, hope, and caring who lived her life with laughter and to the fullest.
She is absolutely beautiful. And there's like, there's like a Zooey Deschanel look to her because mm-hmm. I just looked her up.
And it's like the big cheeks. She's got the bright blue eyes. This like cute little brown hair. Like literally, yeah, if she had bangs, it'd be Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah, like the dark brown hair. Although in some of these photos, it looks like she has highlights. But like so pretty. She does smile with her whole face.
Mm-hmm.
She is so cute in her little theater program.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And so obviously Lauren was a well-rounded girl, to say the least.
Of course.
And we're zooming into 2011, which was Lauren's last semester of high school.
Okay, so what was she in 2011? She would have been just 18 or just about 18?
17 or 18, okay. Yeah. Actually, 17 up until April. So where we're at right now, she is 17, just about 18.
Okay.
Lauren had been going to Wayland High School since her freshman year. I mean, she grew up in Wayland, like the minute she was born all the way through.
Yeah.
And she was sassy, so incredibly talented, and so excited to be in her last year, but like her last semester of her last year, and everybody knows what that is.
Yes.
That is like the time for celebration, for doing everything you want. Most of your college stuff is figured out. You've at least applied and like deciding where you're accepting.
Yep.
You're getting pumped for prom. You're getting excited for graduation and like your fun final summer before you go off and like start your life.
Yeah, with whatever you that's going to look like.
And so she was in like, she was just riding high. This is a great time for her. And she had just gotten her college acceptance letters and finally made the big decision that in the fall she was going to go to Elon University in North Carolina.
Okay. So she was like, I'm leaving New England behind.
Mm-hmm. She said, I'm going down south, baby.
Good for her.
And it likely comes as no surprise to you then that Lauren had a boyfriend. Lauren's boyfriend was Nathaniel Fujita, and we're going to call him Nate. Because everybody else called him Nate.
Sure.
Nate was born to Beth and Tomo Fujita's child, which if that sounds familiar, Tomo Fujita has a very successful career as a guitarist. And as far as I know, is still a professor at Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Oh, okay.
So that's pretty cool.
So his parents.
Yes.
Makes sense that he would be with a girl who's musically inclined too. Maybe they have that in common. Right.
Exactly. Actually, I did some stalking online and I actually linked it in the resources for you guys, but she, for one of her high school projects, interviewed his dad.
Aww.
And there's like exactly what you'd imagine, like the cutest little 10 PowerPoint combo of a school presentation and like, this is my boyfriend's dad.
Aww.
They're cute. So that is linked if you guys want to watch it, as is some of her singing and other stuff like that, because I thought it was cool to have not only that available, but to be able to present that to you guys because it was such a big part of who she was.
Yeah.
But all of that to say, something unique about Nate was he was also super talented. Mm-hmm. I mean, his friends say he was shy. He didn't talk that much, but that he was a really good friend and had a kind heart. But that's not all, because Nate was an athlete to a T. He was a wide receiver for the Wayland High School football team, and he was described as fast, tall, and coordinated. So literally think about
I've literally never been called any of those things.
Yeah, me
either. I am slow, short, and clumsy. How the hell are you?
I've only been called tall by you. So that is Nate. And like, as you can imagine, these two are like the it couple of high school, right? Yeah. She is like so wonderful, so kind, so loving, and also so incredibly musically talented. She also is athletically talented because she's great at tennis. So she's playing on her little tennis team and he's doing all of the football stuff. And they have been together for like 3 years at this point, which in high school is like forever.
Yes.
So all of their friends called them like the ideal couple. I mean, he was good at sports and so was she. He's tall and cute and she's 5 foot tall and cute and like not just athletically talented, but also artistically talented. Yeah. And one of their friends, I thought this was funny, called them both very attractive. So they're like hot and popular and also wonderful people.
Yep.
Which is kind of a rare combination.
Yeah.
At least in my experience in high school.
Yeah. And like well-rounded. And right. Didn't mean they were going to like grow up and get married. I mean, they were kids, but.
Right. Well, and that's kind of the thing, right? After dating for that long, Nate's family is like, yeah, I mean, she was part of the family, but also they're kids.
Yeah.
We loved her. They described her as a good choice for him and lovely, which is just wonderful. Like, you know how many bad high school girlfriends kids bring home?
Yeah.
And their parents are like, okay.
Can't wait for this one to be done.
All right. Yeah. Let's see.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it in 6 months. See where we're at. What he says. So it was super sweet that like everybody kind of took them as a pair and took them in and was so happy for them together, but also individually. You know, by all accounts, the first 2 years of their relationship was really good. But the third got a little rocky, starting to fight as high schoolers do. So fights turned into chronic bickering, turns into chronic fights, turns into on again, off again relationships.
Right.
You know, and that's where they fell in this last year. And I think all high schoolers and young people in their beginning relationships have experienced something like this. It's not quite a rite of passage. If you can escape it, I recommend it. But it's something that a lot of people go through when they're figuring out what good boundaries are and what good choices are for them long term.
Yeah, but when you're a teenager, you're also an asshole.
Yep, most people
are. Even the best or best intended, not malicious at all, but like you're also finding yourself.
Yeah.
And like if you're going to be an asshole, that is your trial and error time. And then you grow up and you're like, oh, okay, so I liked how this felt. I did not like how this felt. This is how I'm going to carry myself. This is how I choose to change.
Because
you're able to do that at that age.
Well, and a lot of the times you have to have the consequence of acting a different way to decide to choose differently.
Yeah.
It's like the hot stove phenomenon. You can tell a kid not to touch a hot stove and if they listen to you, awesome. But if they don't, they have to handle the burn on their hand and go, oh, I don't want that burn again. I'm not going to do this.
So they're probably still not going to touch that hot stove.
Right. So ideally, you get away without having to do the trial and error. But if you do the trial and error, that helps from personal experience to change how you act to what you want to do.
Yeah.
By Lauren's 18th birthday on April 1st, she broke up with Nate for good. And no April Fools. No Bazinga.
Oh. He waited till April 2nd. He was like, shit.
He was like, are we?
Damn.
Hey. And she was like, no.
Oh, man.
Lauren saw this as a good move for the future. I mean, after all, she was going to North Carolina for college. And Nate had been recruited to play football for Trinity College in Connecticut, which was like a childhood dream of his. So his dreams were like coming true TM.
You know? So they were going to be separating anyway, going different places at different times.
Right. And in her mind, it was like, okay, we'll get the hard part done. The breakup's going to suck, but then we can enjoy the summer and then we'll go our separate ways. And that's high school. That's college. That's this time.
Yeah.
You know? And Nate was not as excited about the breakup. For him, it was his first love, his first big relationship, and his first dump.
Oh.
Which is... Hopefully it's not his first dump, but first time getting dumped, you know?
He hath been broken up with.
And it's never a fun place to be. It really isn't. Like, it sucks, especially when you add on top of that it's a 3-year long relationship in high school. Like, you think you're beating the odds, baby, because you already have in so many ways.
But again, that feels permanent to you.
Mm-hmm.
But then you realize, hey, if I still had what I thought I wanted forever at 17, how unhappy you'd likely be.
Unhappy, but also all of the growth you would have never gotten to, you know? And that's not to say that you can't grow together, but it is to say it's less likely that you're going to grow in the ways that you would have chosen otherwise.
Yeah, 16, 17, 18-year-old me was an idiot.
if you knew me at 18, you don't know me. Like,
no, seriously.
Thank God for that, for me personally. Yeah. But
how many expired versions of us exist in people's memories? It's like, ugh.
It's like, please look at anything I say or write or do today. It's so much different in such a good way. But Nate was not in the best of moods, as you may imagine. So from April to May, this graduation time, he was, to say the least, depressed. Even Nate's friends and family tried to get him pumped about his childhood dream coming true, playing football, like being a wide receiver for Trinity, doing the things that he had always been so passionate and excited to do. And by all accounts, he was deadpan, unanimated, could not give a shit.
Because he didn't have her. Oh.
Well, I'm assuming there's a lot there, right? Like, not only do you not have her, but now you're mourning this relationship. High school is coming to an end, and high school is a good time for him. So there's going to be a mourning period of that. And
can't
that
relate.
Change. Same. But, you know, I can empathize. And I'm assuming that change is hard for everyone, but to add mourning on top of mourning and to have those two conflicting with each other.
Yeah, it's a lot of change at that time, and that can be freaky.
Right, and he's just kind of shell-shocked, and he just stopped giving a shit.
Mm.
He really did, and that's so hard because I completely understand it, but it doesn't mean that you get to do whatever you want.
Right.
You know? So with this backdrop, we go to a party. Okay. Because now we're in May, June, and graduation is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, happening. And picture with me the world's worst 2010 party you can possibly think of. I know it's 2011, but like, we're not that far into 2011, so
yep,
we're really living the 2010 culture, ATM. And there are kids drinking out of red Solo cups without a care in the world about environmentalism or underage drinking laws. allegedly. No confirmation on whether Lauren and her friends were getting crunk, but it seems like plenty of people were. But Lauren and her two closest friends, Hannah and Chloe, threw a huge party to celebrate graduating.
Mm.
There was like 150 people there, music, dancing, like a big tent. Probably Give Me Everything by Pitbull or California Girls by Katy Perry was blasting on some like old speakers that were technically waterproof, but like nobody would even bother touching them because they knew their dad would be so pissed if anything happened.
And was it at someone's house?
Probably.
Okay.
It seemed like it was kind of a backyard thing.
Yep.
And Nate came to this party.
Okay.
And Lauren was fine with it. I mean, like, they have the same friends they have forever, but Lauren didn't really want to talk to him. She wanted to do her own thing. They were broken up. She was like, I want to party with my girls, celebrate graduating. I'm going to dance a little. I'm going to like bop around to the tunes, like probably do some acapella solo kind of thing on top of it. I don't know when Pitch Perfect came out, but it seems like it would have been her vibe. So like,
to do the cup song?
Yeah, something like that, you know, with her empty cups. Who knows? So her friends recall Nate talking to her, saying some kind of like, talk to me, plea. Her friend Hannah recalls it as, quote unquote, typical drunk guy, like blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my God.
She remembers Lauren saying to get away from her, and then more seriously, like, no, get away from me, Nate.
Aww.
Like, stop talking to me.
Yeah.
But it didn't take much longer before Lauren had gone back inside, I believe to her house, so it might have been in her backyard. But she went to her mom crying, and she was like, he's harassing me. He won't leave me alone. He doesn't even want me to dance with other people. And, like, it didn't sound like other boys. Like, it just sounded like other people.
Mm.
Which is concerning in and of itself, but it didn't take much longer after that where she ran inside that Nate had like angrily gone to the tent and punched one of the poles that had hung it up or that it was like resting on. So the tent starts to collapse. So it's like this huge scene. People have to go over and like help it stand up, see if they can fix what happened. And it really only ended when Nate was asked to leave.
Oh.
Which sucks. You know what I mean? I'm sure this kid feels so defeated at this point.
Yeah.
Again, doesn't mean you can act like that. Right. But he's like, okay, well, the world's against me. Like, high school's over. My girlfriend doesn't love me anymore. And, like, now what do I have?
Right.
This tent.
Yep.
Fuck this tent. You know? Like, that's where you're at. So, as May and June came, graduation happened and went. Things for Nate didn't get better. He was drinking a lot and smoking weed every day and pretty much stopped talking to any of his friends. It got to the point where his mom took him to see a psychiatrist, and Lauren even worried. Her friends said that she would ask if she should go talk to him, if she should reach out, if that would help, if it would make things better.
Well.
Well, you know, like, 3 years doesn't disappear like that.
No.
And when you see someone that you care about struggling that much, like, you want to help, but in her position, how much can you do? Because you're part of that hurt.
Yeah. Are you just going to make it worse by...
Right. And so I don't think she did for a while, but finally in July of 2011, on July 3rd of 2011 to be specific, Nate's mom came to her work and was like, listen, I'm so sorry. I'm like really sorry to do this, but he is not good. And I was just wondering if you'd reach out, like maybe hearing from you or see if you can get any answers as to why he's not okay. Because like they've been to a psychiatrist. They've been asking him. They're trying to get him pumped and nothing's working. And so Lauren was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. I've been considering it, but yeah, all right. So Nate's mom leaves. Lauren's at work until like 6:30-ish. And by all accounts, she left her work at the Natick Mall around 6:45 p.m. And allegedly, she was going home to hang out with a bunch of friends, probably to celebrate the 4th the day after, you know. I know Hannah and Chloe at least were there. There might have been other people there. Mm-hmm. But she was going to make a pit stop on the way home to talk to Nate. And she didn't tell anyone about that.
Okay.
Normally, they always knew where she was. But it also makes sense to me that, like, if you're really going over to say, like, hey, are you okay? And leave. Like... And you find out that day, I might not.
Yeah, and
also,
she wasn't planning on going there like all week. The mom swung by and was like, it would be really great if you could, if you're able to. And she just decided on a whim, yeah, I'll just swing by my way home.
Right,
thinking
exactly.
It might be 10 minutes and she's really not late.
Right. And so Lauren sent a text to Nate at 7:05 that night saying here. And that's the last text that Lauren sends.
Oh, God. So she did go to his house.
Yes. And on our timeline, 8 came and went, and so did 9, and so did 10. And her parents are getting stressed because she got out of work hours ago.
Right.
And her friends are at her house.
Yeah, and she's still a teenager where, like, you know, if you're 22, maybe it matters less where it's like, it's been a couple hours, I haven't heard from you. Not that it always does or should, but, like, you're still, you just graduated high school. You're still living in the house. Like, your parents still know...
pretty much everything.
Yeah. Like where you are, your friends are at their house waiting for you. Like that, all that timeline stuff doesn't really add up versus if you're like 30 and
you're like, I got to make an errand after work and you come home a little bit later than they might have expected.
Yeah. Just different.
So it was good then that they got so on it. They called the police that night. They were like, she was supposed to be home hours ago. Like there are people at our house that she was excited to go see. Mm-hmm. Can you just see if you can find her? Like basically a wellness check almost. But the police went out. They asked them some questions, obviously. They went and they asked Nate some questions because they found out, like, at the end of her shift that she was on the phone. And everybody gave the same story. She came there. She was there for, like, 5 minutes, didn't even get out of her car, and left.
Okay.
Like, I assume Nate came out, said hi.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, are you good? And he was probably like, yeah. And she left. Because, like, why are you going to spend more time on that, you know?
Yeah.
But Lauren's family and friends were frantic and more frantic as each hour passed.
Of course.
Because eventually on the morning of July 4th, 2011, Lauren Astley was found dead in a marsh with a bungee cord in her hair.
Oh.
A bicyclist had found her passing her body in, like, kind of a swamp or a marsh area.
Mm.
And... he at first only saw the fist, so, like her hand sort of stuck up from the weeds and all the plants. And then he saw that she had like a giant gash on her neck.
Oh.
And he called the police, as you do.
And this was the 4th of July?
Yeah.
Okay, so really just a matter of hours later.
Truly. Okay. I mean, less than 12 hours later, her body was found. Oh. And the hard part here is like, there's a CBS documentary called Loved to Death about this case. And Lauren's friends were there the whole night. So they were up waiting with her parents.
Yeah.
And that's just, that is like a very unique, awful situation to be in where you are finding these things out in real time. And so are her teenage friends.
Yeah.
So like you still have to be kind of on parent mode. But also you're losing your kid.
Yeah.
And those friends are like, where is our friend?
Yeah. They probably also lived at your house all the time. You're probably right. Thought of them as like additional kids in the bunch. And
right. They probably knocked on the door, walked in and said, hey, mom. Hey, dad.
Yeah. Just open the fridge.
Yeah. And you're like, don't eat all of the fucking Capri Suns.
Yeah.
Like you have the last 3 weeks, please.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's the worst it got. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just a shit night for all of them. And Lauren's mom remembers sobbing when she found out and just being like, don't let it be Nate. Don't let it be Nate.
Of course.
I mean, even her friends were like, there is literally no way this was Nate. Like, Nate had nothing to do with this. It's not who he is.
Because he loved her so much.
Yeah. I mean, well, they were together for so long.
There's a fine line.
There is. But being the last person to see her, the police had to go back to Nate's home. Of course.
Yeah.
And when they returned, it was Tomo, Nate's dad, who answered the door. And conveniently, Nate was nowhere to be found.
Mm-hmm.
So the police left and returned swiftly with a search warrant. Not only because of his convenient absence, but also while they said hello, they noticed an odd little stain in the garage.
That'll do it.
Mm-hmm. So when they came back, they tested said stain, which did come back positive as blood. And during their other searches in the home, they found more blood evidence and bungee cords found in a black gym bag in the family basement. And the gym bag also had a pair of soaking wet sneakers, like covered in mud, wrapped in like a plastic bag.
Oh, like from a marsh?
Maybe? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And then the police searched Nate's room after that. And they really only found one area of interest in like this crawl space between where his like wall ended and the ceiling.
Oh.
If you can picture it with me, like there are some old houses that have like itty bitty crawl spaces up top.
I'd board that shit right up. No way.
Same. No, thank you.
No.
But he didn't. Instead, he put some clothes and some shoes up there that were soaking wet and dripping with blood.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So the police obviously find Nate. He is at his cousin's house and they arrest him early in the morning of July 5th.
Wow.
Which is fucking fast police work.
Yeah, that's within 48 hours. Granted, he had a lot of evidence. Like, there was a lot of evidence there. Yeah, he did a
pretty shit job at hiding any of
that. It would have been hard for the cops to fuck that up.
But also, I mean, just the quick response time on her parents' behalf.
Oh, yeah.
The police immediately going out the same day, getting a search warrant the same day, and making an arrest by the morning after. I mean, 36 hours probably from when she went missing, but less than 24 from the time she had been found.
Yeah.
Which is, like, it's fast.
No, that's incredible. I mean, the police work there, just to, like, not tell the parents immediately, well, she probably ran away.
Right.
You know, there was a time, and it was, I don't know, mostly from the 70s to really the early 2000s, where, like, that was kind of the catch-all answer. And in some cases, it really was. Like, yeah, they really did go hitchhiking. Yeah, they really did want to go away and stay away because cell phones weren't what they were and all of these things.
Right.
That it would have been easy and probably pretty typical practice to tell the parents, why don't you give it a day?
Give it a day. Like,
she'll be home.
More than 3 hours.
Maybe she had a bad night at work. Maybe she stayed over at the boyfriend's.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she did any other thing, but they likely could have had any excuse in the book not to. And an excuse isn't, I don't even mean it like that. Like, there's valid reason to also delay that a little bit in that time, but they didn't. They jumped right into it. And I think that's how it should be.
Well, and also, especially knowing that statistically half of murders get cleared. And by cleared, I mean an arrest is made. That's not even saying someone's found guilty in court,
right?
Like, just an arrest. So the fact that they cleared this so quickly.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Incredible. And no, it wasn't like Nancy Drew where they were hunting down clues, but still attentive and efficient.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to take too much time here reviewing the court proceedings. It was Nate. I mean, I think there's no other person in her life that had a motive or a desire or a reason to hurt her.
So did the mom set her up?
No. Actually, I think the mom really was concerned.
She's going to feel like...
awful. Awful.
Even though it's not her fault, her son took that action, but... it's not like Lauren had planned on stopping by July 3rd and planned on dying that evening.
No.
Meeting her son. And it's not like
his mom was like, hey, you know what? I think you're good. You've had enough, right?
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't a family affair. I do believe they lied on his behalf that first night.
Yeah, because, I mean, parents of the suspected killer are rarely the most accurate historians.
True. And also, like, there's a level, I'm sure, of protective parenting that comes in where you're like, I don't think my kid would do this. And how very dare you assume that?
And even in the most selfish of ways, there's a lot of parents that, like, they don't really give a shit about their kid, but they're like, that image on me.
Right.
Like, I will lie. Like, we'll have our own conversation behind closed doors.
Right. We'll handle this internally. Thank you.
But I refuse to let my life and our family's reputation and all of that ride on what you did.
Right.
So they'll lie just to protect that.
And I'm happy to say I don't think it was so much of that, but I don't think it was none either. Like, there are so many different factors at play when you look at stuff like this. Yeah. But it came out that he had murdered Lauren within 15 minutes of her arriving at that home. She was dead by 7:20 p.m.
Wow.
He had given her special instructions to park in a spot she never did in the 3 years that they had dated.
Weird.
It was like, park here, not where you normally do. She came in, he got her into the garage, and it is found, at least with the evidence and autopsy, that he brutally assaulted her before slitting her throat. So she was alive for a lot until she wasn't, which is awful.
Was there a sexual assault component?
Not that I could find.
But he beat her, basically?
Yes. And eventually slit her neck, which is how she died. In the garage, where he then drove her Jeep to the beach. I think he left her purse in the car, dropped the keys in the sewer drain. Or, like, storm drain, you know?
Yeah.
They were later recovered, which I was like, damn, the second set of keys now I've heard of being recovered from a storm drain. Yep. Nice. But then he drove home, or, you know, found a way home after that, put her body in his car and drove it to the marsh.
Wow.
And he obviously didn't have a whole lot of time because her parents were so far on it, but he also didn't do a whole good cleanup job, if you will. Maybe it was because there wasn't a lot of time. Maybe it's because he's an 18-year-old and doesn't think about that shit. You never know. But Nate was given life without the possibility of parole.
Wow.
He spoiled any future beyond Wayland, Massachusetts, and any hint of a football career he very likely would have had. What I think is incredibly to note is after the verdict and the sentence were read, Malcolm Astley, Lauren's dad, walked right over and hugged Nate's parents.
Because they both lost a kid.
Yeah. Well, he was like, I had a very real sense that we both lost, like, a child that day.
Wow.
Which, that makes me want to cry. I'm like, yeah, I'll hug him. Like,
yeah,
they didn't ask for that shit either.
No, that's just... that's awful because it, like, not that it should matter because ultimately, like, your child isn't with you anymore, but that was not her fault. It was 100% his fault. Mm-hmm. And so I think not only, like, losing your child, but, like, grieving the life they could have had that they took away from themselves.
Yeah.
Like, no one did that for him. He did that. And it was his decision making. Like, Lauren was a victim of his. And I think that, like, she will be remembered in all of the good ways and all of the good that she did. And he took her life. He took the good that she put in. And I think as a parent, I'm sure you grieve, like, the life you had hoped your kid would have, that, you know, you just wanted them to be happy, that they're not going to have that. And that your family and them and everything attached to them will now have this distorted, awful mark on it. He's going to grow old in prison. He's not going to see the light. Right. He's not going to have the life that you spent the last 18 years preparing him for and guiding
him
through.
Him.
Yeah. And supporting him in that he was going to go probably on a scholarship to play football and have a fantastic life. And this was a very minor heartbreak he'd probably laugh about in a matter of months.
Right. I mean, fuck, maybe a year. But then you go to college and you find a whole new world of people.
Like by October, he would have forgotten her name.
Mm-hmm. And I think...
In a healthy, good way, I mean.
Yes. And I think, too, that so much of the hurt of this case is having these two kids together for 3 years. Like, you watch the other kid grow up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when Lauren's mom found out she was dead, I mean, she sobbed, yes, because her baby was dead. But she immediately afterward was like, do not let this be him. Like, don't let this be the choice he made. Come on. Because you watch him grow too.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, how 14 to 17 is a big difference.
And his parents, I'm sure, like, not only are sad that their son did this, but, like, they loved her and viewed her as, like, they are also grieving her death too. And,
yeah,
like, how short her life was and how little she really got to do, that they're going to grieve her death in a very odd way too.
Well, and unfortunately, I mean, anybody who's experienced the death of a peer or a classmate or someone your age, young like that.
It's so weird.
You hit those big milestones and you go, damn, I wonder what they would be doing today. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And his parents, both of their parents probably have a big sense of like, I wonder what she would have been doing at our age. Like,
no doubt.
Where would she have been? You know, some of those questions, they're unanswerable, but it doesn't mean you get the choice to not ask them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you sort of are forced to sit and think about that every once in a while. And so a little update here was that early in this year of 2024, there was a law, and I don't know if it had been passed or if it was just confirmed by the Supreme Court that it was, like, passable, it was legal.
Mm-hmm.
But Massachusetts confirmed a law in which offenders sentenced under 20 or 21, I've seen it different in different reports, are not eligible to automatically be given life without parole.
So they've adopted what the U.S. Supreme Court did in that it was unlawful to sentence any, like, a juvenile to life. So
yes,
they've just extended that age, it seems like, up to under 20.
Which makes sense, and it doesn't. The whole premise of it is, like, brain development and your frontal lobe develops last. We know this. Like, that is the part of your brain that thinks about long-term consequences and impulsivity and all of that. That doesn't technically develop to your 25 or 26. So I'm glad that they didn't extend it all the way up to that.
Yeah, but maybe they're biding their time to get there. But I kind of disagree with it, because by a certain age, regardless of whether it's fully developed, it is developed enough that you know lasting impacts and you understand consequences. And at the very basis of it, you can understand life and death. You might not know all the nuance and all of the different, like, vernacular that goes into it and how those different things will come into play, but on its
bare bones,
and
you should not murder someone, because by the time you get to third grade, you're being told not to hit other kids, you keep your hands to yourself, and then you get a little bit older and you understand the permanency of some of this life and death stuff. Or I will admit, I grieved a lot as a kid, maybe that was just me, but I feel like, you know, by that time, typically, that, like, when someone is dead, they're dead.
Exactly.
That is not reversible. And that mixed with the 10-year-old lesson of keep your hands to your fucking self should be enough, I think. But I do appreciate, I mean, it doesn't mean that they can't get life without parole, but it means
they'll
they
get a resentence
automatically. Yeah. Yes. And so Nate's case will be up for review to see if his sentence will be changed. And according to Lauren's mom, she said, I did think it was over when he was deemed guilty and sentenced, but that was completely naive. I don't see how, if Lauren doesn't get to live her life, why he gets to live life at all. I don't want him dead. I don't believe in the death penalty, but he doesn't deserve to be out and living a regular life.
There's a show on Hulu, and I want to say it's called Killer Kids or something like that, but mm-hmm. each episode focuses on a different case, and it's several years after the fact, but it's a juvenile that was convicted for murder and sentenced to life. And what it highlights is the court process of the resentencing with that,
right,
with that new law that was passed. And so many of the families are coming back like 20, 30 years later, and they were like, we put this to bed already in our home, in our hearts. Yep. Like, we found closure, and we were assured by every single one of you in this room that it was over for us, that we could
move on in whatever way we could.
And now yeah. here we are, however many years later, back in court again.
Same thing.
Arguing again that you had it right the fucking first time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I can understand the legal perspective of it, absolutely, but on the human level, you see these families, it's like, is that justice? What does that mean? And there are some cases, sure, but others where...
Yeah.
You got it right, you know? And is this one that? I don't know, but...
So
to hear the families of like that are directly affected by these laws, and while we can understand and even appreciate or agree with the law, you can't take that element out of it too. You need to acknowledge that, like, every time you do that, you reopen a wound for a family that was already assured by you that it could heal.
Well, it's
like
funny,
or try.
It's funny you say that, because Lauren's mom literally ended her interview with, another reopening of wounds is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Because it is. You're literally prying that scab off that is probably scarred because it was healed.
Yeah. And it's never, you're never going to be 100% okay. No. I don't think that that's, it cannot be what it was before. And I think it's a, could potentially be a disservice to those you lost if you act as if it didn't happen. That's not mm-hmm. that's likely not possible, but you were able to move forward in a way to say, we did all that we can do. Those who are responsible, justice has been brought about, and
right
now we can close that chapter and move on, and whatever this is going to look like for us,
right?
And then to get that letter in the mail or that phone call to say, hey, there's a resentencing, and they could potentially be let out today.
Right.
Or whatever that mandatory minimum is, because some of them, like, they've already done so much time that, like, when that decision's made, they get let out, like, within a few weeks. Like, there is no time between that sentencing and them reaching their minimum or whatever it was supposed to be, that they get out. Like, it's pretty quick.
Yep. And so, I mean, I haven't heard anything. I will obviously keep everyone updated. But before we end this episode, there's a few things I need to end on.
Mm-hmm.
First is literally just information about intimate partner violence, because it is real, it is significant, and the most dangerous time to be in any relationship is during the breakup. Specifically, toxic and abusive relationships, but most toxic and abusive relationships have a cycle. It's typically called the cycle of violence, where there's this honeymoon stage that leads up to conflict. The abuser abuses, and then there is this love bombing, reconnecting phase after, where, well, they're going to spoil you and shower you in gifts and compliments and big mm-hmm. grand gestures and assure you that it'll never happen again. But damn it, if you could just love them a little better, they wouldn't have to hit you next time. And it's this awful, weird mix of love bombing and emotional manipulation and degradation that continues this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And love bombing is a weird red flag, especially as a kid, to not understand why it's not common and something to look out for. If within a few weeks someone's saying, I love you, and they think you're their entire world and everything revolves around you, you think, how awesome, this person likes me that much. And they might. But also,
yeah,
they could be prepping or repeating a cycle that they've seen happen, where this is just what you do when things are good. But when things are bad, they're bad. And I'm not saying that, you know, here there was that relationship. I don't think that it was abusive before this, but there was a cycle. They were on again, off again. That's not to say there wasn't fights and some sort of unhealthy communication between them.
Yeah, and it's a lot of times hard to differentiate between what's a normal, you know, I say normal, typical argument with right. amongst teenagers who don't have all of the coping skills maxed out, who are probably carrying some kind of trauma with them,
right?
Who don't know how to process all, who aren't adults yet. Right. And while you understand the greater gist of right and wrong, do you know all of the most healthy ways to communicate? Probably not. I think that takes years to like yeah. hone in on, and everyone should ideally still be working on it, right? But like, it doesn't need to be that he was this abusive asshole beforehand,
right,
for this to be possible. But it's also possible that he was, and this was hidden or unseen because Lauren thought that that was normal, or maybe she just got sick and tired of it and was like, no, I'm really not coming back this time. And this yeah. is what set him off, because before he was always able to get her back.
Right. There are so many different reasons, but it's also one of those things that once you start to see that cycle, like, please let those flags pop up in your head. If someone's giving you 4 dozen roses, one for each day you've known each other, it's too much. Why are they that invested? And not because you're not amazing, but they
you
need
are, boo. You're pretty great.
They're going to need more than 4 days to understand the depths of how amazing you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just look out for some of that. If it's too good to be true, usually there's a reason it's too good to be true. And, you know, if at any point in time anybody tells you, if you loved me better, I wouldn't hurt you, or mm-hmm. I wouldn't have to do this thing, that's a no-go, babe. You didn't put a gun to their head and tell them to choke you because you didn't cut the crust off their bread, you
or
know?
Even emotional abuse, like, well, I wouldn't have to say this awful stuff to you if you
yeah,
were
I wouldn't
a better
call you a useless bitch if you were useful
yeah
bitch.
if you were a better anything, like, that's yeah. it's not a healthy way to communicate, and it's that is abusive. It's not how things should be,
right? And I think that it's important to talk about some statistics here. I've included them up in the resources for all of you, but just as a reminder here, 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men have reported being victims of severe physical violence, like beating, burning, strangling by an intimate partner in their lifetime. And I want to make this known. This is the statistics of what have been reported. And typically in criminal justice, we know maybe at max half of crime gets reported. Yes. So let's talk 1 in 2 women and 1 in 3 men. Because that's probably more realistic. I can't say for sure. That's not what was collected. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that the people who answer statistic questionnaires are the ones that are willing to say it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least write it down.
Yeah.
Intimate partner violence also accounts for 15% of all violent crime. When we say it's not normally the stranger on the subway, it's not normally the stranger in the subway.
Not that it can't be.
It can be.
But it's most likely not to be.
But you are significantly more likely to be seriously violently injured by the man sleeping next to you than the one sitting across from you that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also had a few for Massachusetts specifically. And Massachusetts says that on a typical day, local domestic violence hotlines receive approximately 19,000 calls, which is roughly 13 calls every minute.
Wow.
In Massachusetts alone. In 2018, domestic violence accounted for 20% of all violent crimes in Massachusetts.
What's in the water here?
So look into your own states. Specifically, I found all of this at the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence website. There's one for every single state in the U.S., mm-hmm. And I believe they have a like worldwide hotline, but I've included the hotline at least for the U.S. here. Please look into your own country if you are somewhere else. But if you believe you or anyone you know may be suffering from domestic violence or intimate partner violence, domestic violence usually means you live in the same place. Intimate partner is like, that's my boo.
Is that what they have in the laws?
Yeah, that is actually in intimate partner violence refers to anyone called boo or babe or honey bunny. If any of that is happening, there is help. You can go to thehotline.org or call the domestic violence hotline at 800-799-7233. Again, that's going to be put in the resources for all of you. But please remember, if you are online, you always have a safe escape. Usually they'll tell you how you like press escape twice or hit a certain X. and it will take you somewhere random. So if your abuser walks in and it's not safe, you can get away. But you will have to clear your own history. It does not do that for you. So please just reminders on that. In remembrance of Lauren, her family has championed an organization for her called the Lauren Astley Memorial Fund. And this fund focuses on educating teens on breakup violence, intimate partner violence, and props up community service and the arts. Statistics say that somewhere between 2 and 5 women die in the U.S. every day from domestic violence. That's a lot.
Wow.
That means on the low end of that statistic, every 12 hours, a woman dies from this. Doesn't get assaulted. Not the rapes, not the beatings. Dead. And more than that, women aged 18 to 36 statistically experience the highest amounts of intimate partner violence. So please, if you need help, get help. I know there are so many reasons why victims of intimate partner violence continue to go back to abusers. If you knew someone was going to abuse you, you wouldn't start a relationship. There's always something good there. There's always something pulling you. And after a certain amount of time, there's usually other elements of manipulation and control, whether that's financial or emotional or isolation because they've taken you away from everyone. So there's reasons why. But that's why we add these statistics and that's why we add this help, because I know that you probably think just because your boyfriend hit you one time, it's not going to happen again. But you don't know. And I really don't want you to find out if you're one of the 2 to 5, you know? And so in remembrance of Lauren, her family continues to keep this fund going. They still, I believe both of her parents still go and give talks at high schools to end breakup violence and talk about all of this because it took their daughter.
Yeah.
And it took away the future of her boyfriend that could have just been a very pleasantly remembered 3-year high school relationship down the road. But this happens. It's not myth. And Lauren was so bright and so looking forward to continuing her love of all things athletics, arts, her family, friends, and her heart for others going forward. And she never got to do that. So they get to do it for her. So if you are feeling so inclined, I think you can donate to it. Certainly you can share it. If you have anybody that you're concerned about, let them know. It's better to tell them now than not be able to. And if it's you, there's someone out there who will love you without hitting you too. So that is the tragic death of Lauren Astley, but a phenomenal reminder of why we are safe and why we try to do everything in our power to stay safe and to stay seen. Lauren's death was cleared so quickly and it was so much less tumultuous than it could have been because her parents were so active, because the police were so efficient, and because they were able to open and shut this case so quickly. It doesn't happen for everyone.
Mm-mm.
It's pretty rare and it's a phenomenal rare thing to come across.
Absolutely.
But the actual issues here are not rare. They are pretty widespread. And if you think about 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men, even if that is the max of that statistic, think about how many women and men you know, because you know at least one. So send love to all your little people. Remember that this time is not the end of your life. If you were in high school and going to college and breaking up with your boyfriend or girlfriend. Oh my God, I got broken up with in like May of my senior year and I was so pissed. I was so sad and so angry. It was like the first time I was like really, really sad about a breakup.
And now
I'm like, I hope that guy's fine.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So be it, you know?
Because you're a kid.
I was a child.
And that's all that it should have been, you know?
Yeah. And like that is a great first relationship to have, mm-hmm. so long as you can healthily put it to bed.
Yes.
So that is what I had for you today. And I'm sorry because it was quite sad, but I thought it was important to bring up about now.
It's definitely important to bring up and definitely related to the time of year and things that are going on in many, many people's lives and a lot of listeners' lives.
So all of the love, check out what you can. And if you want to remember a lot of Lauren, you can look at those two YouTube videos I linked. There's one of her singing in her a cappella group with her senior solo that she was so excited about. And also the little video I found of the interview she did with Nate's dad. So that is all quite cute.
Yeah.
So if you did want to see any of the people, places, things we're talking about, if you wanted a visual representation of all of those hotlines and resources that we are giving you guys and don't want to check below in the description box, I hear you. You can go to our Instagram at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period, TIME period, FOR period, TRUE period, CRIME period, POD because podcast was too long. But if you, much like podcast, wanted to send us something a little bit longer, your thoughts, your feelings, your reaction to how freaking cute Lauren's singing voice is, any of that, you could definitely email that. But Allie, where would they email that?
So if you wanted to send us a cute little email, if you wanted to send your pod pets, we'd love that too. You can do that to abouttime, the number 4, TC at gmail.com. So that's ABOUTTIME, numeric 4, TC at gmail.com. We love you and we love getting to hang out with you.
Sure do. We love to love you, and we love to look at our clock. Because if I do, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye.